Welcome to Shelby Confessions, a mix of inspiration and understanding to help you cherish the day. Hello. Today I want to talk about, I went to go see the huge, epic Halloween classic movie, right, in theaters. And the crazy thing is I got this huge epiphany, right? Like, huge epiphany of anxiety. You know what I mean? Like, take for instance the Jamie character. She's much older woman now, and she still has the trauma from what happened from Michael Myers. So she literally prepared herself her entire life for when he should come back, when he should terrorize her again, what she should do, how she should act. I'm not going to tell you the movie, but I feel as though every traumatic incident, that accidents or anything that forges our minds to go into trauma, anytime those things happen, we begin to form two things. We either become fearful, and with fear, we balance off to prepare ourselves for if it happens again, or we're traumatized into if it happens again. So with those two instances, we have to choose what our strength and our weaknesses are. Make sense? Crazy. Prime example, I literally have this huge anxiety over, like, I'm an author, right? I'm a writer. I have a wild imagination, fiction. I come up with stories in my mind. But when something happens to me traumatic, I tend to not want it to happen again, not put myself in that situation. But if it does happen, if I can't even prevent it from all my oopsie daisies or, you know, overthinking, overanalyzing, if I'm put into that situation, how will I respond? And crazy thing why I say that is because, prime example is when I was younger, I was in middle school, and it's crazy, right? I went to Molo. And he used to have an after tutoring program. And I didn't need the tutoring. I really didn't. But I went because most of my friends were going. And there was this one girl who was just like, she was an outcast. And everybody wanted to call her promiscuous. And I just thought that, you know, she was just misunderstood. So I would hang out with her and also one of my other homegirls. So after tutoring, we all skipped tutoring. My homegirl was smart, and she was like, nah, I'm just going to go straight home. I said, okay, I don't want to go home. So I followed this girl, the promiscuous one. And she was like, well, my uncle, she was like, uncle or cousin, I can't remember. He has a house. He can go let us chill over there, and we can stay there until it's time for us to go home. I said, okay, cool. We go to the house. The guy looks sketchy. They don't look related. And he was like, y'all can do whatever y'all want. So she goes into the back room, and when she goes into the back room, the guy that I remember her, you know, talking to, and I'm not going to put him out like that, or her, because this is when we was in middle school. They go in the back room, they do the thing, okay? And it's me, another homegirl that showed up, and like two dudes. These two dudes, I didn't really kick it with them. I didn't really know them. They were like, you know, whatever. But they started smoking, and I was like, ah, don't do that. I don't smoke. They were like, no, Shelby, smoke. Now you smoking cigarettes. I was like, I can't stand cigarettes. Cigarettes nasty. I don't do that. So I go into the kitchen. I was like, maybe they have some snacks. And when I go into the kitchen, there was a guy. One of the boys followed me. He was like, you know, I've been liking you for forever. I said, that's cool. That's good for you. But I don't like you. And I kept it moving. So he was like, well, why you don't like me? And I said, because I don't like you. I'm like, take it for how it is. We could be cool. But I mean, what you're expecting from me is to say I like you, and I don't. I don't care for you. So then he proceeds to force himself on me. And he throws me down on the table. And so I ended up hitting him in his face. And every time I would hit him in his face, I would hit him in that one eye because I wanted to, you know, knock his vision off. But every time I would hit him, he would pin me down even more and spread my legs by putting his body full in between me. And I'm panicking because I'm like, this boy is not about to take me. Like, I ain't having it. So I kept hitting him in that one eye, kept hitting him. And I'm getting tired because he just keeps pushing me down. So he keeps hitting me. Next thing I know, the homegirl, she grabs the pot that was on the stove because we were in the kitchen. She grabs the pot, hits him over the head, and we run. And as soon as we run into the living room, because I'm like, I can't be here. I got to get out. So as soon as we run into the living room, the guy who owns the house, mom, storms in and was like, who are these kids in my son's house? So we run to the back door and run out of the back of the house and cross the street. Because that's how close the house was from my school. I went across the street and I'm panting and I'm like, oh my gosh, we could have got caught. And so I go home, right? I'm thinking, you know, I'm never going to have to see this dude again. So the next day, everybody was asking, oh boy, what happened to his eye? And the homegirl that hit him over the pot, she was like, we got to tell somebody. I said, no, because then they'll, you know, I was like, no, because if we tell somebody, then they'll know we weren't in tutoring. So I had older cousins. And like, the crazy thing in middle school is not a lot of females like me because none of the girls wanted to be friends with me because they thought I was promiscuous, but I wasn't. I only hung out with the guys, the older guys. Like, I was in seventh grade. I hung out with the eighth graders because, and the seventh grade boys, because when they wanted little love notes to their girlfriends or they wanted little poems and poetry and stuff like that, I was the one writing it for their girlfriends. And so that's why me and the dudes got cool, because I would talk to them like, don't do your girl like that. Do this, you know, write her letters. And I wrote all these dudes. It's crazy. I'm not even gonna put their names out, but I wrote all these dudes love letters that they would send to their girlfriends. And the girls just thought I was handing the dudes love letters, you know, because I was being promiscuous with them. But I was actually giving them love letters to give to y'all. But the females didn't like me because they just thought, you know, they didn't know the full story. And I didn't want to put the boys out there, so I never told. So back door, if you think about it, I actually was getting backlash from people thinking I was doing extra stuff, and I wasn't. I wasn't. I was so misunderstood, and it was crazy to me. So when we got to school, my homegirl that hit the dude over the head with a pot, she told my cousin that was in eighth grade, because my cousin was like, what's wrong with your eye? And he just kept deflecting. So when they told my cousin and all his group of friends and then all the dudes that I knew wanted to hurt him. They were standing, and I remember this directly, they were standing in front of the boys' bathroom, because that was a thing. Like, if you wanted to fight, you would fight in the bathrooms. If you wanted to skip class, you'd go into the bathrooms, or you would wait until after school. Like, the way I was acting was, I was just very quiet, so they were like, nah, if Shelby got to feel uncomfortable through school, we're going to fight you at school right now. So my cousin stood by the bathroom, the boys' bathroom, and said, yo, let me holler at you right quick. Did you try to rape my cousin? And he like, nah, that's not what happened. He said, July, because I see the way she acting. And her homegirl told me she had to hit you over the head with a pot. And I'm looking at your eye messed up. So how else would your eye be messed up? Don't lie to me. And so he got nervous and ran. He took off and went to the principal's office and told them everything that happened because he was afraid that he was going to get harmed at school. So when that happened, parents got called. I got in trouble and all kind of XYZ, XYZ. The moral of the story is, from this day, after that day forward, oh, my brother got in. My brother's literally was like, you can't be following people and all that obstacles and stuff like that. But from this day forward, I never put myself in a predicament to where I'm a follow somebody. And I never put myself in a predicament with a man where I feel uncomfortable. And before I even have that set mindset to where, like, I'm gonna tell you how paranoid I am. For one, my brothers would take me to the club, right? We would go to the club, and my oldest brother, Odin doesn't go to the club like talking about. If he goes, it's rare. But if he goes right by the exit. Now, what Odin does is when he goes to any club, any outing, he walks around the entire building to find every exit. So if something happened, he can escape. That's how paranoid he is. So when I would go to the club with Devin, my other brother, we're dancing, having a good time. Odin would test me. Odin would dress in all black. Now, mind you, he worked as a carpenter, so he'd be working all day. He wore his work clothes, but he made sure it was all black. Brother's dark skinned it. What my brother would do is he would stand in the corner. He would stand in the corner and watch me. And he wouldn't tell nobody that he's there. He wouldn't even tell my other brother that he was there. And so when I'm dancing, I just feel a tap on my shoulder and say, "Ma, I need you to be careful." And he would step back in the shadows. And it would make me paranoid. And so when he explained why he did that to me, he said, "Because I noticed that you never walked around this club and filled out your surroundings. Because if you would have filled out your surroundings, you would have knew I was standing in this corner the whole time." And so from all these traumatic experiences, I've noticed that I am extremely paranoid. When I go to any event or club, I analyze the front back door. I analyze the people that are around me. I analyze how I'm gonna get out and how I got in. I'm more traumatized from all these experiences, whether they were good or bad, but for mostly the bad experiences I've had to happen to me, because what if that guy would have took advantage of me if I would have just stayed there and cried wolf? What would have happened to me? What would have happened to my friend? Like, a lot of things could have happened, a traumatic turn, but the fact that I was in such survival mode and my friend was like, "Nah, this ain't gonna happen," I survived it. But because of those traumatic experiences, I have anxiety. And it's not just that. I can tell you a list of things that have happened to me where I am very traumatized from. So with watching this movie, Halloween, I realized that, and it's crazy. I love scary movies because I feel like that's reality. Like, and it's weird because I'm such a jolly person, you know what I mean? And this podcast is to uplift people. It's not to depress people. It's not, I'm teaching you a better way to deal with your day-to-day basis. But for me, I've learned I love scary movies. I love sci-fi. I love criminal. And the reason why I love it, because this is reality. This is reality, not Disney and musical and happily ever after. That doesn't happen. So what do you do in the face of negativity? What do you do in the face of trauma and anxiety? What do? And how do you overcome that? Nobody really gives you a blueprint on how to recover over trauma. You know what I mean? Like, nobody knows the right way or the wrong way. And I feel as though when I watched this movie, I was like compelled to sympathize with her. I mean, sure, I haven't been traumatized by Michael Myers. That's cool. I haven't. But I could sympathize with her for wanting to take control over her life and never have that incident happen to her again. So yeah, she took a couple of shooting classes, and yeah, she you rearrange her house for anything that happens. But it was her facing the reality of the trauma. It wasn't her shielding herself. It wasn't her playing. I mean, we are all victims to trauma, whether we acknowledge the trauma happened to us or not. And sometimes the things that happen to us are so overwhelming that we store them in the back of our minds to where we forget them. It's like an amnesia. Like, no, that didn't happen. When in all actuality, they did happen. And the only way that those things resurface, it could be something simple that will make that traumatic experience resurface to where you'll have no choice but to deal with them. And I want to express to that person that's feeling that way is that, first of all, anything that traumatizes you or makes you feel like a victim or is so overwhelming and unbearable and painful and heartache to you, I need you to face. I know by saying that, that might be a very hard thing to accept. I need you to face it. I need you to acknowledge that it happened. Because if you don't acknowledge that it happened and you place it just like every other thing in the back of your mind as a dream, an illusion, that same pain will resurface when you least expect it and haunt you and halt you dead in your tracks when you're trying to develop a positive light for your life. Like, let's think about all these movies. Like, prime example, everybody watches the Madea movie. And there was this one character, she was like so angry, so combative, right? And then when they're sitting at the table, come to find out she was raped and she had a child and her mom decided to take the child and raise the child. But that instance happened to her so problematic, no one else knew but her mom and her sibling. But her husband didn't even know. So when it all came out, blurting out, when she's trying to have a happy life or pretend to have a happy life, but doesn't fully understand what her anger is corrupting from, what her arguments are spewing from, are rooted to. You know, psychologically, when we push things off to the side and like, we're going to deal with that later, our personality changes. I don't care what you say, the more of the mask that you portray to have that you're okay and it didn't let you down, your personality will change. Things that didn't bother you before the instance happened will bother the hell out of you now, will cause you to interact with people differently, cause you to respond to people differently, cause you to be a different person that you don't even notice you're becoming. And so I'm saying face it, because the reality is we all need to face our fears, confronting them with courage, because courage is the only thing that will let us live out our days, developing growth. No one is perfect. There is nothing perfecting. Perfection doesn't even exist. Get that out of your head. But what I really want you to find is the root. Face your trauma. And then after you face it, acknowledge it. After acknowledgement is healing. Everybody wants to point blame. When you're trying to heal, don't put blame on anything. Acknowledgement is not pointing the finger at a person. No, that's not it. Because it's not getting you over what's happening. If you point the finger at yourself, you're placing blame on yourself from what happened instead of acknowledging that this happened. This is all it is. After acknowledging this traumatic experience, whether it be a car crash or whether it be drug addiction, whether it be rape, whether it be abuse, whether any of those, you have acknowledged that it happened to you. Yes. After acknowledgement is the most important step after acknowledgement. And it's healing. Healing is being able to face your fear, confront it, not carry it on your back, not use it as an extra luggage load, but move past it. Everything is a growth and lesson learned. Whether at the time when you're going through it, nobody want to hear that. You're going to overcome this. Nobody wants to hear that crap. But if you acknowledge what happened to you and acknowledge that it happened and that you're still, this is the thing. No matter what happens in life, you're still here. You're still breathing. You're still given a chance to start anew and start a new day. So why conflict on a past that has only been built to carve your future? Everybody has a different past. Everybody has different experiences. So with all those different experiences, life lessons, religion, gender, race, all these things plays part. We all are hurt individuals, yes. But what you do with that pain shows your growth. Maybe you might need to do therapy. Maybe you might need to meditate. Maybe you might need an alternative, not drugs and liquor and all the toxic things, healthy things to take you step by step in acknowledging that you are going to overcome. And with that, that comes anxiety. And I have anxiety. But what I've learned from watching this movie is that, which is crazy to watch a horror movie and get a life lesson in it, is that through any traumatic experience, the victims have the real power to either continue to be victimized. Because when you go through a traumatic experience, most of those people who have been abused, they either go on to abuse others or they go on to abuse themselves, causing, you know, inflictions upon themselves. I think the true test of the victim, the victory for the victim, is to not choose those two options and choosing to prevail and actually walk through the fire and stand victoriously, not as a victim. And that's the difference. That is a difference between a victim and a survivor. Which one are you? With all the anxiety that you go through, with all the traumatic experience do you go through, which one are you willing to accept? A victim who's been victimized, abused, hurt, with traumatic experiences, or a survivor who's been through it all and been tested and learned to change all those negativities into a life stepping stone and prevail. And with all the odds against them, willing to not lay down, but willing to be and to survive.
I just want to tell you guys to promise to cherish the day. And it's your girl Shelby Henny signing off. Have a good one, y'all.